You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Janae Cummings.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, September 28, 2016.
We budgeted for 5 new sheriff's deputies to try to address this perpetual shortfall, along with a new animal control officer and necessary support staff. And we'll be considering a request for 5 additional deputies next year as well.
A new public safety tax is expected to mean more sheriff's deputies, plus more money for courts, fire departments, and the county jail. More on that later in the show in today's WFHB Community Report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Rich Fish sheds light on the sweetheart swindle on a new edition of our Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
An organization that serves refugees is setting up an office in Bloomington. Exodus Refugee Immigration got approval from the federal government to open an office here. That's according to a report today in the Herald Times. Exodus has applied to help resettle 60 refugees here in the Bloomington area. The organization's director, Cole Varga, was quoted in the Herald Times saying the city could see refugees as early as March of next year. Varga did not return a call from WFHB seeking further details on the arrangement. The announcement comes amid protest from a group called Grassroots Conservatives, led by former congressional candidate Robert Hall. That group has been organizing for months with the stated goal of blocking the immigration of Syrian refugees to Bloomington.
Indiana Secretary of State Connie Lawson has issued a warning to Hoosier voters regarding their voter registration. An organization entitled the Indiana Voter Registration Project has reportedly submitted forged voter registration forms in Marion and Hendricks counties. According to a press release from the Secretary of State's office, the group has changed some voters' addresses on registration forms without the voters' knowledge. Monroe County Election Supervisor Laura Dainke says that even though this incident occurred, voters in Monroe County don't need to worry about voter fraud.
Well, you know, we're very cautious in our office. We check each application that comes in. We have, our applications that come in, our registrations that come in actually go through 2 people that check them, our front office, and one's a Democrat, one's a Republican. So we're pretty cautious.
Though Dane Key doesn't see voter fraud as an immediate threat to registered voters in Monroe County, she agrees with Secretary of State Lawson in saying that it is always a good idea to verify your voter registration before the October 11th deadline.
I think that's a great idea for everybody to do. And it's really, if you're an Indiana voter, it's easy to do. Our website is accessible. It's easy to use. I've heard more than one person comment on how easy the indianavoters.in.gov is. And it's an easy website to use, very user-friendly. You can verify your address on there with an Indiana driver's license. You can update your registration with a valid Indiana driver's license. You can update your registration. You can request an absentee application. As long as you do that before October 31st, you can do that. So I think everybody should verify their registration on there, verify their address on there. I think it's a great idea.
Secretary of State Lawson believes that the Indiana Voter Registration Group will continue to turn in fraudulent voter registration forms up until the October 11th deadline. Anyone who has noticed suspicious activity with their voter registration should contact the Secretary of State's office at 1-866-461-8683.
The Bloomington Animal Shelter has announced plans to promote dog adoptions in celebration of National Adopt-a-Dog Month this October. Several special events are scheduled, beginning with Ryan Park's Bark in the Park event this Saturday, October 1st. Also, there'll be a Run for the Animals benefit October 2nd. Several adoptable dog appearances at the Monroe County Library, the Hoosier Hills Community Fair, and Hops for Hounds at the Upland Brewery Sunday, October 16th. Dog adoption fees will be reduced through the month. All dogs are vaccinated, microchipped, heartworm tested, and spayed or neutered. And as always, adoptable animals can be visited at the Bloomington Animal Shelter, 3410 South Walnut, as well as on the shelter's website, bloomington.in.gov/animal shelter. More information can be found by calling 812-349-3492.
A city press release recently announced a new facility use policy for community members interested in using public facilities for gatherings and meetings. Mayor John Hamilton says he would like to make it easier for citizens to use city-owned and managed facilities, while at the same time allowing city administration to preserve, protect, and maintain the city's assets for future generations. Hamilton says that, in the past, the process for renting or using publicly owned facilities, like parks and rooms in the showers building, has been confusing. The new policy, which will go before the Common Council to be approved on November 30th, is intended to streamline the process and make spaces more accessible. While room reservation and temporary use of city facilities spaces continues to be free for nonprofit and government entities, other individuals will be charged rent. Complete details are available at bloomington.in.gov/facility use.
Monroe County continues to compete with 50 other communities for the Georgetown University Energy Prize, a nationwide two-year energy savings competition to reduce natural gas and electricity used in homes, municipal buildings, and K-12 schools. As part of the effort, the Monroe County Energy Challenge will distribute 1,000 free LED light bulbs in October as part of Project Porch Light. The project is intended to help community members reduce energy loss. Events will be held October 1st, 8th, 15th, and 16th at various locations around the county. For more information, visit mocoenergychallenge.org or call 812-349-3558. Reporting live. For WFHB, I'm Scott Weddle.
And I'm Janae Cummings. In a special meeting last night, the Bloomington City Council and the Monroe County Council voted to readopt a 0.25% local option income tax for public safety. Attorney Philippa Guthrie, who represents the City of Bloomington, explained the need to readopt the public safety tax that was previously passed in June.
The City Council and the rest of the Income Tax Council members voted to adopt a local public safety tax in June of this year in compliance with the local option income tax statute that was in place at the time. We are essentially tonight repassing a version of that public safety tax. The reason is that in 2015, the state legislature enacted a new local income tax, or LIT statute, which was to replace the old statute. The new statute, however, didn't take effect until July 1st, after we passed the tax in June. In August, we were advised by the Department of Local Government Finance, the DLGF, in Indianapolis, that due to technical ambiguities in the statute and transitional issues from the old statute to the new, that our public safety tax would only be effective through December 31st, 2016. And if we wanted a public safety tax to continue into 2017 and beyond, we would need essentially to repass the tax under the new statute. So that's what we are doing tonight.
The tax will bring in more than $7.5 million. For more on the public safety tax, we go now to today's WFHB Community Report.
For WFHB, I'm Joe Crawford. The most recent statistics from the U.S. Census Bureau indicate the median household income in Monroe County is about $42,000 a year. That kind of household will be paying about $105 in additional taxes next year as a result of the county's new public safety tax. When the tax was first proposed, local officials mostly discussed it as a way to fund the 911 dispatch center, which has run into funding trouble at least partly because their money has long come from phone landline fees. But the scope of the tax has grown much larger in the last few months. Elected officials now say the money will go to lots of things, from fire departments to new sheriff's deputies to a potential expansion of the county jail. Last night, several members of the county council spent some time justifying the new tax. Perhaps the most fervent argument came from council member Jeff McKim.
I've heard a few people share the concern that the income tax council passed the tax before even identifying the need. And I want to address that concern. I'm quite positive it's the same way at the city, but I know we at the county have an enormous unfunded backlog of public safety needs. And by the way, when we're talking about the unfunded public safety needs of the county, I think it's important to note that the majority of the county's public safety expenditures are actually on behalf of the entire county, not just the unincorporated part, including the city. So, you know, as part of our public safety function for the county, we're responsible for funding the correctional center, the courts, probation, the prosecutor's office, and the public defender's office. All of these functions are on behalf of all of the residents of the county, including those who live in the city. And so what about these unfunded public safety needs in the county? They really come in kind of two broad areas, road deputies and what I'll call work release for a, you know, a, just a shorthand. As far as road deputies go, the council has been hearing for years under multiple sheriffs how desperately we need additional road deputies. We've seen the data and we know how far we fall below appropriate standards. We have over 800 miles of county roads, state highways, and interstate highways, and we typically have only 3 to 4 or so deputies out on the road at any given shift to patrol those 800 plus miles, even though we really need 6 to 7 depending on the shift. And because of understaffing of state police and the way that their districts are drawn, we're having to do more and more patrolling and responding to incidents on state roads and, of course, on I-69. In our recent budget hearings, we budgeted for 5 new sheriff's deputies to try to address this perpetual shortfall, along with a new animal control officer and necessary support staff. And we'll be considering a request for 5 additional deputies next year as well, a request that I plan to support. But in addition to the sheriff's deputies, we also know that we have a serious and long-term problem with our jail capacity. We're very near the mandated population cap, as many people know. In fact, on September 12th, just a few days ago, the secure population was 244, with a maximum of 248. That means we were only 4 inmates in secure beds away from being in violation of the federal mandate and having to start considering moving inmates to other jails, paying for them to be housed at other jails and to be transported to and from those other jails. So besides this large population, we've also got several blocks down in lockdown because of inmates that require special treatment and many mental health issues. This problem is not going to go away soon. Some of it's caused by state legislative changes that push certain felons down to local jails instead of Department of Corrections prisons, but some of it's also simply a consequence of a growing community with all the challenges that that growth brings. We've known for years that we need a true community corrections facility. You may remember that in 2009 there was a proposal to build a new jail which included a community correction center, and for a number of reasons, including changes in state finance statutes, that proposal never went forward. For a while, the sheriff ran a limited work release facility in the jail, a previous sheriff, but even that had to be eliminated because of the jail population. So we're really near the time of reckoning on this issue of jail capacity. And the public safety tax can be a real game changer here. It can allow us to develop a minimum security facility that can emphasize treatment and employment and can help get the people who are in the jail but don't need to be in a maximum security jail out. But that sort of facility can't be created overnight. We have to get it right. The Board of Judges and the County Council and the County Commissioners and the City Police and the Sheriff have begun a series of conversations that will ultimately result in a long-term strategy. And I know my colleague, Councilor Jones, is part of those conversations. And so for that reason, the county only budgeted about half the estimated public safety revenue for 2017. This isn't because we don't have pressing public safety needs. We do, and they're well identified. It's because of something of this importance and magnitude we want to get it right. And so we're intentionally saving over $1 million of that revenue, not budgeted to the top of the revenue, to make sure that the funds are there when the plans are completed for a long-term strategy. Getting this right is one of the most important things any of us up here need to do for our community.
That was Monroe County Councilmember Jeff McKim speaking last night. The County Council joined the Bloomington City Council, the Ellettsville Town Council, and the Steinsville Town Council, as they all considered whether to approve a 0.25% public safety tax in Monroe County. At the end of the meeting, the tax passed. Although other governmental bodies were present for the meeting, county council members spent the most time discussing why they supported or opposed the tax. Councilmember Shelley Yoder, who's also currently running for a spot in Congress, was the only member to vote against the new tax.
I want to be clear that I absolutely support our police, firefighters, sheriffs, deputies, dispatchers, anyone who puts their lives on the line to provide public safety. But here's my concern. I will vote no on this tonight solely to underscore once again my earlier no vote when this issue first came before us. The legislation crafted by the Indiana legislature was so poorly crafted. It doesn't guarantee that police, sheriff's deputies, firefighters, and others will have the strongest voice in seeking support for their fine work from these funds. I earlier voted to support projects brought forth by firefighters and other providers of public safety when those proposals came before the County Council and other members of this Income Tax Council. I have been pleased to work alongside my colleagues and other elected officials to provide support for public safety here in Monroe County. But all that hard work came from the goodwill of the local elected officials. I'm still not happy with the basic framework set up by our state legislators, and I want my vote to underscore that our public safety providers need better guarantees in writing in the form of state legislation to assure that their valuable services to our communities will get the support they need from these revenues. I want my no vote to lead to changes that strengthen the voice of men and women who are in the forefront of keeping us all safe. And I will be voting no this evening.
Yoder, who is a Democrat, was the only member to vote against the tax. The council's lone Republican, Marty Hawk, was in favor of the new spending. She explained why.
If we're going to do a new tax, it must be for the things that the citizens of this county is most concerned about. And over again, we hear they are concerned about public safety. And it is more than just central dispatch. I've heard that coming at me all weekend. Well, what are we doing? I thought this was all central dispatch. And I know to begin with, that was the conversation. But what good does it do to get a hold of someone at central dispatch if they try to get a hold of a fire department and they have no fire trucks to send, or if they need a sheriff's deputy to show up because someone's about to break in their house and we don't have a sheriff's deputy to send there? I think this was the right thing to do, and I just regret that when it was first passed, it was all happening so quick that the public didn't have an opportunity, because we didn't have an opportunity, to put together budgets in advance of that first vote.
That was Monroe County Council Member Marty Hawk speaking last night at a meeting where local government officials decided to renew a public safety tax. Workers in Monroe County will begin paying the tax this Saturday, October 1st.
Up next, our weekly Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Back in the 60s, there was a hit song called Crystal Blue Persuasion, and I never figured out what that meant. Now, here's a look at some kinds of persuasion that can make you feel not only blue, but seriously poor. Persuasion cons are an ancient swindle, but they always look brand new. The swindler tries to persuade you of something, which apparently has nothing to do with money. Once you're convinced, the money angle enters the picture as a coincidence, something unintended and unplanned, so you don't suspect that's why the whole game was set up. Take the sweetheart swindle. The swindler develops a relationship with you, convinces you that it's true love. Persuading you that he or she is in love with you is much easier done from a distance, using letters, phone calls, emails, texts, and social media. But then, your distant inamorata needs money to settle a debt, to get out of jail, or simply to travel and be with you forever. So you cough up. After all, how could someone who loves you want to hurt you? And then your love and your money both disappear. Today, the internet has given the sweetheart swindle a huge boost. More and more con artists are discovering that they can work more and more suckers at once than ever before. Another classic persuasion scam turns that idea on its head. The scammer persuades you not that you're loved, but that you're cursed. Okay, this might bring on visions of a fake gypsy fortune teller staring into her crystal ball and asking you to cross her palm with silver. Something very much like that was doubtless popular way back before the Egyptians first noticed the Nile River, and is still practiced even today among the superstitious. Again, on the internet, this scam has roared back to life worldwide. Ever see a pop-up on your screen telling you your computer is infected with a virus and asking you to click here to clean it? If you do, you probably will end up with an infected computer. In 2004, a company called DataLink Computer Products persuaded one wealthy sucker that his computer was being targeted and kept charging him for additional security services. By the time he twigged to the truth, in 2010, he had forked over millions of dollars. A persuasion con game depends on persuading the sucker, and I hope it won't be you, that something very good, or very bad, is true when it really isn't. In either case, it's something you can't, or probably won't, check out yourself, and it doesn't appear to have anything to do with money, at first. So anytime anybody, especially someone you've just met, tries to persuade you, check out what they're saying yourself, if you can. And if you can't, beware. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at WFHB.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@WFHB.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Joe Crawford and Casey Ross, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Joe Crawford.
Our engineers today are Heather Perry and Rob Schoon. Our theme music provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Janae Cummings. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program, recognized among the best newscasts in 2015 by the Indiana chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
And you can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. And stay tuned for Standing Room Only, our award-winning weekly lecture series, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.